We're holding on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis at the bottom, beginning the 8th Perek of Ar Masechta. The subject of this Perek is going to be Bosa B'Cholav. You know, the Torah tells us in three places, don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. And as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, it means not just a kid, but any animal meat. We'll talk about whether it applies in the Torah only to domestic animals or to other types of creatures as well. And it doesn't just mean its mother's milk. It means any milk. We're going to learn the details of that later in the Perek about how exactly we dash and all of that. In any case, yeah, the mitzvah of Bosa B'Cholav, and our Perek is going to mostly focus on that, although in the middle we're going to have a couple of other, we're going to have more later on in the Perek, we're going to have more about Hilchos Ta'aruvos that we learned a lot about in the previous Perek, because we're going to have to deal, of course, with various cases of mixtures of meat and milk, so many of the concepts that we learned previously are going to come up over there as well. Also in our Perek, we're going to end up digressing for a while to talk about the dinim of Netilas Yadayim and before eating and Mayim Achronim after it. So Bosa B'Cholav, we know, of course, it's a classic choik. It's not a mitzvah. It's classically a mitzvah for which there's no known reason, and we just do it because the Eidah said so, which really is supposed to be on all the days and for all the mitzvahs. They have various reasons that Rishonim and Achronim offer various reasons and rationales for it. The Rambam brings in Moreh Nevuchim with that, as with a bunch of other mitzvahs that he holds, that these were all practices of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and therefore Hashem wants us to keep away from that. The Ramban talks about it's a matter of cruelty. You have the milk that was supposed to nourish the baby animal, and now instead you're going to go and cook, then you're going to go and kill the animal and cook its flesh in that. Then you have a Kabbalah, is the idea that milk is chesed and meat is gura, and you don't want to mix them together. And then you have a variety of different rationales and ideas behind the Seisir of Bosa B'Cholav. One interesting point is, that we'll talk about in a second, it does apply, of course, both to Chulin and Kodshim. You're not allowed to, the same way as you can't cook or eat meat and milk when it comes to Chulin, you can't when it comes to meat of Kodshim either. With that said, there's actually a Sifri, that says you would have thought that maybe it should be allowed, the same way as you're allowed to have Shatnez for the Bigdei Kohuna, and the Mishnah, in fact, there it's not just allowed, you have to, the Bigdei Kohuna contains Shatnez, and therefore the Pasuk teaches us, where the Sifri learns from a Hekish, that no, it applies equally well to Kodshim as to Chulin. And there's an interesting Sifra in Chelek Chof Tes, where that ever analyzes, you have the different kinds of kilayim in the world, the different kinds of mixed fruit that the Torah tells us to stay away from. You have shatnez, which is not only where in the bismikdash, it's not only allowed as a mitzvah. You have bosa b'cholav, where you would have thought that it would have been allowed were it not for that limud from the pasuk. And then you have the various kinds of the various other kinds of kilayim where there's not even a havam, you know, there's not even a hypothesis that they should be allowed in the bismikdash or when it comes to kodshim. There's a sicha in the chelek chof tes where it ever talks about, because what's accomplished with these different kinds of kilayim, in particular with shatnez, you're not really making anything, you're not making any new entity, any new metzias. You have wool and you have linen, and they happen to be in the same garment. So arguably, you could argue that bosa b'cholav would be the same kind of thing. You have meat and you have milk. Okay, they got cooked together. So the point is, though, that no, we're still, to some extent, they do, after all, blend together in the cooking, and therefore, in that sense, you kind of had a new entity. And then as opposed to kilai zoyim, kilai behema, or whatever, kilai ilan, all those where you're definitely creating a new entity, a new hybrid, and there's no question that such a thing can't be allowed in the Bismet Dashi here. Okay. So now to get into the painting. The Mishnah starts off, kol ha-boser osu levasho b'cholav. You're not allowed to, now one thing we should realize as we go through the Torah is, first of all, the Torah never phrases it and says in so many words, don't eat boser b'cholav. Targum Okel is translated, it's translated that way in all three places where it appears, in the Shvatim, in Kisisa, and in Kisete, in all places. It says, lo sevashu b'chalei b'chalei, and all three places, Okel is translated, lo sevashu b'sar b'chalav, don't eat meat with milk. But really, the Torah phrases it in terms of cooking it. Which are the implications of that, we'll see as we go throughout the parak. But another point is, after all, the Torah only mentions explicitly Gidi and Chalev Imay. Now, Gidi, we're going to learn later on in the parak, doesn't narrow mean only a young goat. It means a young of any species of animal. And again, the Chalev Imay doesn't specifically mean the meat of the milk of its mother. It means any other. But because of that, because after all, it's one of those things that we have to learn strictly from Torah Shabbat Peh, And because in addition also, after all, this is one of those cases, meat by itself is fine, milk by itself is fine, and only the combination is also, therefore, this is one of those things that people are likely to be more careless with, and therefore we'll see as we go throughout the paragraph that we have a number of chumras and a number of zeras that apply to basar b'chala that wouldn't necessarily apply to other isurim. So the Mishnah starts off, chola basar osa l'vashar b'chala. All kinds of meat, and here we mean whether domestic or wild animal or bird, even though, again, on the face of it means only a goat and maybe more broadly domestic animals. Nevertheless, wild animals and birds are included as well, as we will see later on in the parak, as we'll see soon in the Gemara, and as we'll see in more detail later in the parak, there are different opinions whether daraisa or darabanan. So you're not allowed to cook any of them. You're not allowed to cook any of them in milk, and you're not allowed to eat any of them in milk. Now, the Rambam actually learns that when we get into that point of which ones actually are also daraisa and which ones are not, we're going to say there's an opinion that bird meat is not in milk is not also daraisa, which would mean the daraisa chicken with milk would be mutter, and only darabanan would be also. We're even going to have an opinion. Rabbi Yosef Levi, that's mutter darabanan. We'll get into that later. Anyway, the halacha is accepted like that. That in fact, birds with milk. Is only Dirabanan, which and the Rambam Paskins who are actually allowed to cook them together. The Isser would only be to eat them together in Dirabanan. That has implications, for example, as far as pet foods, for example. If you're going to buy pet food that either way, it's also for a person to eat. But if you're going to buy a pet food that has bird meat, together with dairy, you might be more allowed to buy that and feed it to your dog, because not also to cook, and it's not also bahana, unlike if it was animal meat where it's actually also bahana. Okay. So the Mishnah says, chutz mibsar dogin v'chagogin, with the exception of fish and locusts, those you're allowed to cook and them with milk and eat them with milk. Now, there is a concept that the post that the Achronim discussed beginning from the Beis Yosef onward about not having fish with milk because it's harmful to health. So the Beis Yosef brings it on the tour. Your day assuming Pei Zion, the beginning of the Bas of the Ramah, the Davke Moshe says on that, wait a minute, we find in the Gemara you can't have fish with meat. Where do we ever find fish with milk? So he says a funny expression. It seems that Mis'arav Laharav, Bas of the Cholam, it seems that the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Machaber, mixed milk and meat. That here the Gemara says you're not allowed, you shouldn't have fish with meat, and he was saying with milk. Nevertheless, various Achronim justify what the Beis Yosef says, and some of them write that they actually asked doctors in their times, and doctors confirmed to them that fish with milk is in fact not healthy and can cause various diseases. So the Maaseh, you have different minhagim and different things as far as that. And in addition, you also have, is it dafka specifically with milk or with any dairy product in general? One interesting point is that Abayim have a tradition that with butter it's fine, and therefore if they're going to be having fish, then if they're going to be having fish together with any kind of dairy, then they would have some butter on the fish as well, and then that way that for some reason mitigates it. You find also, I mean, people have, let's say, lox and cream cheese. The Bashkos stuff less of an issue because they're not being cooked together. Alright, anyway. So fish and locusts, at any rate, you're allowed to cook them and you're allowed to eat them. Here's another din. But also lahalas in magzina ala shofar. Also, it's also to put meat and cheese together on the same table. Again, with the exception of fish and locusts. Those you're allowed to, because again, there's no issue of basar b'chala. The concern of putting them on the table together, Rashi points out, they may touch one another. You might eat them together, and you might eat them together, and also they may touch, and then they're going to absorb from one another. Now, we're going to learn in the Gemara, you are allowed to eat cheese, and then shortly, or any dairy, and shortly after that, you're allowed to eat meat, as we'll talk about in the Gemara. Nevertheless, if you have them on the same table, then there's a concern that you may end up eating them together, and also that they may absorb, from one another. So the Ran, here's an example. The Ran points out that we're treating bas b'chala more strictly than most other isurim because each one is mutter by itself, so people might get careless with it. So therefore, you can't have them on the same table. The Ran says in that case, for example, it wouldn't apply to other isurim. You'd be allowed, let's say, for example, to eat on the same table as a goy who's eating his tray for food, because you know that food is off limits to you, and therefore you're not going to eat it. So, and you have the various dinim that come out of that as far as what you're allowed and not allowed to have together on the same table. Next, so again, chutz mitzadogim lachadogim, except for fish and locusts, because there's no issue with those. Now there's no real chiddush. Tosfos points out just once we mention that in the reisha, except for fish and locusts, and then it mentions it over here in the sefer as well for parallelism. Tosfos, by the way, wonders how come in many of the other prokim of Amasecha it goes through the details. This mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laaretz, whether the Beis Hamikdash is standing or not, holding mukdashin. How come that whole list is missing over here in this mitzvah? So Tosfos says there is a tesefta, the tesefta on our perek, in fact, does include all those details. So fine, it didn't mention them in the Mishnah, but it mentions them in the Braisa. And the point would be, again, as we just said before, there would have been reason to think that maybe it shouldn't apply to Kodshim, and therefore the Braisa has to tell us that it does. And also, Tosfos brings from the Rashbam, since it mentions Bikurim in the same pasuk, since it mentions Bikurim in the same pasuk as Basa B'Cholam, Reishis Bikuri Ad Masa Tavi Beis Hashem Alekecha, Lo Sivashav Di B'Chalei Vima, in two out of the three places where the Torah mentions it, and you would have thought that maybe only when Bikurim are applicable is Basa B'Cholam applicable, and therefore the Braisa needs to tell you that not, it applies even in Chutz Laaretz, and even when there's no Beis Hamikdash. Next, so far we have two dinim of our Mishnah that apply to all meat, meaning whether domestic or wild animal or bird, but not to fish and locusts, that you're not allowed to cook them together and that you're not allowed to put them on the same table. And the Mishnah, by the way, mentions another din that has the same exception, and no dimin and basar, if a person makes a neder not to eat meat, he would be mutter to eat fish or locusts, because when it comes to nedarim, we go according to loshen b'nei adam, we go according to the common definitions that people use. People use the word meat to mean any kind of meat, whether domestic or wild animal or bird, but they don't use it of fish or locusts. So that's another din. That doesn't really belong in our Masechta, but once we're mentioning things, chutz mivsad dogam b'chol gavim, and the Mishnah put this in as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, ha'oy for osim adarais. Now, the implication of our Mishnah seems to be that birds with dairy are also darais. Because when the Mishnah starts off by saying that's osir, kolabasa, osir, levashal b'cholav, it sounds like it means adarais. That's one way of looking at it. Or Tosfos points out another way of looking at it is because the Mishnah says you can't even put them on the same table, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. If the whole thing was also only Dirabbanan, wouldn't that be a Gzeira on top of a Gzeira, which the Chachamim don't usually do? So therefore, the Gemara is assuming that to start with, that the Mishnah is saying that birds with milchik are also Daraisa. Well, command the like Rabbi Akiva. Well, who would that be? It would come out then that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Because he said later on in our parak that the issur of wild animal meat and of brood meat with dairy is not Minatorah. He holds it only Dirabbanan. Well, the problem with that is Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of the Mishnah. Where it's at the end of the Mishnah, where it says, I know him and Abbasah mutab of Sadogim of Hamdavim, that if a person makes a neder not to eat meat, then he's allowed to eat the meat of fish and of locusts, so that's for people don't call that Basar. Ha oif Basar, now the implication would seem to be that birds would in fact be included in that. Now, Asan Rabbi Akiva. Now, that seems to work only like Rabbi Akiva. The Omar, where Rabbi Akiva has a rule when it comes to Nedarim, whenever you have something where it's not definitive based on the instructions you were given, and so it's not clear whether it includes a particular entity, then the shliach would have to go and would have to ask specifically, do you want this? Meaning, imagine somebody sends you to the store to buy meat. Would you automatically assume if you asked to buy meat that it could include chicken as well? Or would you ask, when you say meat, do you include chicken as well? Rabbi Akiva holds that, Rabbi Akiva holds that if a shliach would ask about it, that, and it's not automatically included, then therefore, so you would have to ask about it, and Rabbi Akiva considers that that's considered in the category of it. In other words, again, when you send somebody to buy meat, not necessarily are you including chicken, but if there's no meat available, if there's no animal meat available, if there's no beef available, he's not necessarily going to just go buy the chicken on his own. He'll ask, is chicken okay? So therefore, Sedar Bakiva considers that that's enough for it to be considered in the category of meat as well. In other words, as opposed to, for example, the shliach would never say, well, there's no meat and no chicken, do you want me to buy you peanut butter? Because that's for sure not in the category of meat at all. Namely, the Tanya. We learn in a Braiser. On the side, it says it should actually be the Tanan. It's a Mishnah in Nedarim. Hanodim in a Yerech, the Mishnah says that if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat Yerech, which means vegetables, then the Tanakhama says he's allowed to eat pumpkins, because people don't call them yerek, people call it a fruit, even though so botanically it is the fruit of its plant, and people eat them as vegetables, but nevertheless people don't call them vegetables, people call them fruit. Pumpkins, strictly speaking, gourds, whatever, they're all in the same family. That kind of plant. But Rabbi Akiva oyster. But Rabbi Akiva says no. Pumpkins would be included in his neder as well. Why? Suppose a person might say to his shliach, go buy us some vegetables. Now, if there's no vegetables available, he's not going to automatically say, well, then I'll just buy pumpkins. He would say, Loi Matsasi Aladloim. All I could find is pumpkins. Do you want me to buy them? So therefore, say that for coming, we see pumpkins are not automatically included in the category of vegetables. Namely, if you send a shliach to buy vegetables and you don't specify what kind, so he'll get whatever vegetables are available. If there's lettuce, tomatoes, maybe not tomatoes, maybe tomatoes would be the same thing, but let's say tomatoes, lettuce, cucumbers, celery, all those kinds of things, he'll get them because, look, vegetables are vegetables. But when it comes to pumpkins, he would have to ask, did you mean to include that as well? So you see, say the chacham, they're not in the category of vegetables. On the other hand, yeah, well, that's true, but that actually is a proof to my side of things. Suppose that there's no vegetables and no pumpkins, is the shliach going to come back and say, well, all I found is beans, should I buy them? No, there's no vegetables. So in other words, because he knows that vegetables doesn't include beans. Ella, so therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, Adarabba, the proof then is, should lure in the chlau yerek. So obviously then, pumpkins are included in the general category of vegetables. They're like semi-included, so you wouldn't automatically buy them like you would other vegetables, but nevertheless, you would at least ask about them. The enkitness, the chlau yerek, whereas beans are not even in the category of vegetables at all. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, that semi-connection is enough that when he makes a neder on vegetables, then he is including pumpkins as well. Now, if our Mishnah says that when a person makes a neder not to eat meat, then automatically he's also in brood meat, even though that's the kind of thing a shliach might have to ask about, that's only according to the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, he wouldn't be included. So then, in that case, Reisha Rabbanan and the Sefer Rabbi Akiva. So is the Reisha of our Mishnah, which implies that brood meat with milchit is also Daraisa is according to the Chachamim, and the Sefer is according to Rabbi Akiva. We don't usually have Mishnayos like that. Now, Tosfos points out that, when it comes to, I mean, wouldn't you say the same thing then about brood meat? Actually, the Gemara asks in the Dorim that when it comes to fish also, if a person sends a shliach to the store to buy meat, and there's no meat or chicken available, but there is fish, then the guy would also come back and ask, or nowadays he'd call up and ask, should I buy fish instead? So that means, in other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, it should be included. And the Gemara explains over there in the Dorim that specifically you're talking about a person who has an eye ache, and therefore at certain times during the progression of the disease, then fish is bad for him, and therefore the shliach can automatically assume that the mishaleach did not mean fish at all. Ordinarily it's true. Fish might be included. So therefore, in other words, so the Gemara explains over there that when we say here, Hanodim and Abosim, Mutab of Sardogim, if we say that it's according to Rabbi Akiva, it wouldn't be across the board. It would only be in that particular limited circumstance where you know that he's not going to want fish. And in fact, it would come out based on another Gemara and Me'ilah that which we'll learn next year, Bez Hashem, that in fact, if it was not like that, then in fact, Taka would be Osir David Fish as well, by virtue of his neder. For that matter, also, when it comes to this matter of pumpkins, the Gemara discusses over there in Nedarim that the point is, the Chachamim are saying that the definition of yerek is only vegetables that are eaten raw, and the Ran explains over there, yerek, by default, means things that can be eaten raw, which is not true of pumpkins. and then the Gemara, in fact, explains over there that's talking about specifically where he said, I'm not going to eat vegetables that are cooked in a pot. So then, in other words, so now the question is whether that means vegetables that can be eaten raw or cooked, or whether it includes vegetables that can only be eaten cooked. In any case, the question is, back to our Gemara over here, it seems that the Reisha of our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Akiva, and the Sefer goes according to, and the Sefer, the Reisha goes according to the Chachamim. The Sefer goes according to Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the question is, how does that work? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rebbe even Nosiv, La'alib of the Tenor. So the answer is, Rabbi Yosef gives an answer, which we've had earlier in our Masechta as well, that our Mishnah was actually composed by Rebbe, and he chose the different opinions of Tanoim, meaning, you know, as we've learned before, much of the Rebbe finalized the Mishnayos as we have them, but much of the Mishnayos existed before Rebbe. Sometimes, though, you have a new Mishnah that Rebbe composed, where he incorporated in it the opinions of different Tanoim as he himself held. So here it's the same thing. Nedarim Sava Lach Rabbi Akiva. When it comes to Nedarim, he agrees with Rabbi Akiva that you have to look at what a shliach would ask about, and then that's included in an extension of the category. And therefore, when it comes to Nedarim, bird meat would automatically be included because a shliach would ask about it. Fish may or may not be included, again, depending on this business of whether the person is going to want fish in his condition. And the Basa B'Cholav, when it comes to Basa B'Cholav, Sovel Ak V'Rabbanan, there he holds like V'Rabbanan that bird meat is also Daraisa, as we're going to learn later on in our parak, and therefore he writes the Mishnah in a way that implies that's Daraisa. So that's one answer. Rav Ashi, I'm a cooler Rav Akiva. Rav Ashi gives another answer. You could say that our Mishnah is all like Rav Akiva. Because Hochi Kama, the Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean to say that brewed meat with milk is also Daraisa. It just says, Hochi Kama, the Mishnah is saying, Kola Bosa Osa Lavasha Mechalav, all meat you're not allowed to cook with milk, and among them, Mehen Midire Toro, Mehen Midire Seferim, some Daraisa, some Dirabana. So the meat of a domestic animal, according to Rabbi Akiva, would be also Daraisa, according to everybody, would be also Daraisa. The meat of a wild kosher animal or of a bird, according to Rabbi Akiva, would be also only Dirabana. And then, with the exception of fish and locusts, the Isra on them is not minatoro, nor midirabanan, those you're allowed to cook and those you're allowed to eat together. In this connection, by the way, the Chassam Sofer has an interesting point. He says, you know, if the Torah had said that you're not allowed to cook Bosser b'chalev imay, then automatically, then everybody would have to agree that it includes birds as well, because he brings a proof that bosser does refer to birds as well. But over here, instead, the Torah says loisavash b'di b'chalev imay, so therefore, on the face of it, means definitely not birds, because birds don't have mother's milk. And the only reason why we're going to have later on an opinion of Rabbi Akiva, of the Chachamim, that say that's awesome in our Torah, we'll learn later on in the paragraph. But Rabbi Akiva is going to say, look, the Torah never uses the word bosser, it just says gvi, and therefore the only thing that you can include in it is something that has mother's milk and something that's similar to a gvi, and therefore not birds. Who the halacha is like, by the way, you have a machlokas we showed him about that. Tosfos later on learns that in fact, in the end, the halacha would be like the chachamim, that chicken with milk would actually be also daraisa. And therefore that would mean you couldn't cook them either, as opposed to, as we said before, according to the Rambam, it would be only dirabanan, and you would actually be allowed to cook them together. And Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam, like that. So again, that would mean you'd even be allowed to cook chicken with milk, but there might be issues of marasayin involved. All right, fine. Okay, so two different answers of how our Mishnah can work. Fine. Next, we said in the Mishnah of also lahalas fulfilled. We said you're not allowed to put meat and cheese on the same table. An interesting point is why the Mishnah there mentions cheese after. So the The Tiferes Yaakov points out that it means, needless to say, you can't put milk with meat on the table because the milk might splash onto the meat. The Chiddush is even cheese, which is hard, and there should be on the face of it no problem of it contaminating the meat. Nevertheless, you're allowed to. On the other hand, there are Shash learns the other way around. He says, milk you'd be allowed to. It's going to be in a keli, so there's less of a concern that they're going to touch one another because the meat is not going to touch the milk itself. Maximum will touch the outside of a container of milk as opposed to cheese. There's a real concern that they might actually touch each other. So the Gemara says, and now we said, but also the halos, so you're not allowed to put them on the table together, neither any kind of meat, whether domestic, wild, or bird. Rabbi Yosef said, Rabbi Yosef says, Shmamina, Shmamina, Psar Oif, Bechol of Daraisa. Here you see from this that bird meat with milk is in fact Daraisa. So not like we just said, so we just had two answers on our Mishnah. What does our Mishnah mean when it says that you're not allowed to cook, that you're not allowed to cook Kol HaBosar, any meat together with milk, and you're not allowed to put any of them on the table with cheese? So first we said, that might mean that it's also daraisa to cook them together, and then that would be like the chachamim against Rabbi Akiva. Then we had Rabbi Ashi's answer that it means it's only d'rabbanan, and it's going to Rabbi Akiva. So now Rabbi Yosef is going back to that original answer. The Mishnah is in fact saying that's daraisa to not cook them together, and therefore that's why we have this zera d'rabbanan as a safeguard around that to not put them on the same table together. If you were going to say that the issur of brood meat or wild animal meat with milk is only dirabanan, then you have to ask achila gufa gzera. Then even to eat them together is itself only a gzera. So then would the chacham make a gzera that you can't put them on the same table because you might come to eat them? This kind of thing is called gzera l'gzera of the chachamim, a gzera to safeguard another gzera of the chachamim. And in general, we don't find that the chachamim do that. So the fact that we find this gzera in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to put brood meat and milk on the same table, seems to imply that the issue of brood meat and wild animal meat with milk is actually minat Torah, and therefore the Chachamim will do the usual thing, asu siyog la Torah, make a fence around the Torah and tell us to not put them on the same table either. Okay, so Rabbi Yosef says, and we're not tamer delay gazrin and gzera l'gzera. So where do I get this point that we don't make gzera l'gzera? Now, Tosfos points out, why does Rabbi Yosef even need to bring a proof for that? We have many places where the Gemara takes it as a given that we don't make a gzera l'gzera. But the point is over here that sometimes the Gemara will say that it's not a gzera l'gzera, it's all one gzera, because without one part of it, the other one won't last. People will start getting careless with it, and soon the whole gzera will fall away. So here the point is that we're saying that how do we know that even in a case like that, we're not going to make a gzera over here, even though arguably you could argue it's all part of the same gzera. So Rabbi Yosef says, I'll bring a proof to Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah in the Sefer Kala. So the Gemara is not going to bring the whole Mishnah. Tosfos points out the Gemara is bringing a bit of a paraphrase of it. Chalas chutz la'aretz, chala that was taken from dough in chutz la'aretz. Now, midaraisa chala, like almost all mitzvahs involving agriculture, midaraisa it applies only in Eretz Yisrael. So of course only a Korean can eat it. Midirabbanan, there's also a concept that you have to take off chala in chutz la'aretz as well. So the whole issue that a zur can't eat it is only midirabbanan. So the Mishnah says, Ne'achelis in a zor ala shulchan, a Koyan can eat that challah together with a zor at the same table. So a zor is going to be eating his chulin food. The Koyan is going to take his chalas chutz la'aretz and eat it on the same table with the zor. And we're not concerned that the zor might eat from it. Because this would be an example of a gzera l'gzera. The whole reason why a zor should not eat it is because it might be confused with challah from Eretz Yisrael, and so to say that you should have to take off challah in chutz la'aretz and only a kohen can eat it is itself a gzera, and therefore you're not going to make a gzera l'gzera. And by the way, the Mishnah mentions another din as well. In addition, also the challah chutz la'aretz, you can give it to any kohen you want, meaning even an ama oretz who's not going to make sure that it stays tahor. So challah of Eretz Yisrael, then it has to be made sure to be kept tahor. So therefore, you can't give it to an Amoritz. In addition, it actually brings from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that And we learn from the pasuk that only machzikim the Torah Hashem, only those who uphold the Torah of Hashem are entitled to matnas kahuna, not amei ha'aretz who are careless with the Torah. It's in Sanhedrin, it's actually later in Al Masechta as well. So therefore, that point about giving it to any Kohen you want is a side point, but the point is, in other words, that we don't say that we should make a Zera, don't eat it on the same table with a Zer, because the Zer might come to eat it, because even if the Zer does eat it, the maximum that's an Isur Dirabanan, and therefore we're not going to make a Zera of Zera. Tosfos has a long, interesting discussion over here about all these dinim, about this business of giving challah in chutzlar. That's basically the Mishnayos. Tosfos kind of goes through over here and then goes through to give a whole pirush on the relevant Mishnayos. Mishnayos challah is in Seder Zeroyim. There's no Gemara Bavli on it, like there isn't on most of Seder Zeroyim. There's Yerushalmi, so maybe this apparently Tosfos decided to use the opportunity over here to explain those Mishnayos, since they wouldn't have an opportunity to elsewhere. Anyway, the idea is, in Eretz Yisrael itself, you give challah, then you have areas close, then you have areas that were conquered in Yeshua's times, but then were not resettled in the times of Ezra, and those have a lesser status as far as dinim of Eretz Yisrael, and in those areas you have to separate two challah, two portions of challah, one to give to the Kohen and one to burn, because of have a concept called Tumas Eretz Amim, and which just goes into details about those Mishnayos and what exactly we learned from them. Tosfos points out in the end that in countries far away from Eretz Yisrael, such as where we live, there you don't have to take two challahs. You take only one challah, which is what we do nowadays. In principle, you could give it to a young Kohen who's not old enough to have Tumas Keri yet, and he could eat it, because the problem is only that it's Tomei, because we're all Tomei Nes nowadays, because Eretz Ha'amim is Tomei Dirabanan, very well, but it's Tomei to begin with, and then it's only required Dirabanan, and therefore, as long as you don't have a Kohen who's Tomei from his own body, then he would be able to eat it. In practice, we generally don't do that. We burn the challah nowadays. We don't give it to a Korean cotton. So fine. As far as this matter of that you can give it to Kohen Shiyutza, and again, Rashi is telling us that it means, in other words, you can even give it to an Amma Oretz, even though he's not Masik, the Torah Hashem, because it doesn't matter. It's Tomei anyhow. So Tosfos says, fine, but that doesn't mean that l'chatchila you should give it to him. It means if there's no Koyan chover around, if there's no Koyan who's in town. So from Rashi, it would come out that you're allowed to give chalas chutzlaretz, even l'chatchila, to a Koyan Amma Oretz. And then Amman again writes the same thing, and the reason is because it's already Tomei anyway, because Tumas Eretz Amman. Tosfos says, no, it doesn't mean that l'chatchila you should give to him. If you don't have a Koyan who's a chover, who's careful with Tumah V'Tara around, then you're allowed to give the chalas chutzlaretz to a Koyan Amma Oretz. So let's say, for example, there's a Koyan chover, but he's rich, and he says, what do you need to give me the chal? I have plenty of food of my own. Give it to somebody else. Maybe even if he does want it, but then there's a poor Koyan around as an Amma Oretz. Whatever the point is, even though he's not careful with Tumah V'Tara, we're not concerned. He's going to eat it when he's Tomei, as opposed to challah of Eretz Yisrael, then you can't. It has to be eaten b'tara, and therefore you can only give it to a Kohen who's a chover, and therefore even if there's no chover around, you'd have to wait with it. You can't give it to an Amma Oretz, so you're going to have to wait, whether you're going to have to save it until you can find a Kohen chover to give it to him. In any case, the point is, again, the beginning of when the Mishnah says that you're allowed, that the Kohen is allowed to eat the challah of Chutz La'aretz on the same table with a Zer. And the point is, we're not making a gzera that you might that the zer might eat from it. Why? Because if the zer eats from it, he's only oivan and isur derabanan, and the chacham don't make a gzera to uphold a gzera of derabanan. Because the whole reason for chalas chutzlaretz itself is gzera derabanan, so we don't forget the concept of chalam. Tosfos, by the way, points out in that connection, so why don't we make a similar thing as far as Truma and Meister? Why don't we say, for example, that even in all the countries of chutzlaretz, we should also have to take Truma and Meister, so we don't forget that. So Tosfos says, because the difference is everybody makes dough, but who takes Truma and Meister is people who own farms, and people who process the grain. Most of us are not farmers, so therefore we don't need that reminder all the time. And challah, everybody makes bread in their house, and therefore we have to deal with that. So that was Rabbi Yosef's proof. But Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says, is that really a proof? If the Mishnah had told us about a case where you have a challah from Chutz La'aretz that was brought to Eretz Yisrael, and you would say, And you should have to make a gzera because you might confuse it with the chala of Eretz Yisrael, which is daraisa. Then the loy gazrinan, and yet we don't make a gzera, and you say that this chalas chutz la'aretz, you're still able to eat, and you're still able to eat with a zor on the table. Then fine, ikal mishma we know, then you would have a solid proof from that that you don't make a gzera like gzera. Because there you would actually have reason for a gzera on the face of it. You would have a very good reason to think it's in Eretz Yisrael. There's lots of challah around which is required daraisa. Why are we allowing this koyan to eat the challah schuch for it with a zor at the same table when he must be because ain't version zero gzera? But, says Abaya, el chutz la'aretz, what you're talking about over here, the challah is still in chutz la'aretz. You know why there's no second gzera? Because there's no reason to make a gzera because there's no you're not going to find challah of Eretz Yisrael in this area such that there should be any confusion. You're not allowed to take Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out. You're not allowed to take challah or truma out from Eretz Yisrael outside the chutz la'aretz. Actually, the Rambam points that out, and the Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that if you took flour from Eretz Yisrael and then made the dough in the Chutz La'aretz, then also it wouldn't be chayiv and challah at the Min HaTorah, would only be chayiv d'rabbanan, even though the flour came from Eretz Yisrael, because the dough becomes chayiv and challah only when it's kneaded, and the kneading took place in Chutz La'aretz. So therefore, so Rasabaya says, so here, you know why there's no gzera? Not because it goes in gzera, because there's no point in making gzera over here, when anyway all the challah you're going to find around here is only d'rabbanan anyway. Aval hocha, but says Abaye, is that a proof for our mission over here? No, you could say ishodes levasuki oifugvina. If you allow him to put bird meat and cheese on the same table, also lasuki bosuugvina, then he might put actual meat of an animal and cheese on the same table. And he may end up eating bosuugvina, which is actually also daraisa. So in other words, fine, you shouldn't make a gzera, you're arguing, don't make a gzera like gzera, but you should make a gzera that you don't make a gzera that you shouldn't put it on the table because you might come to eat it, because it's true, if you eat brood milk if you eat brood meat with milk, maximum it's only an issur d'rabbanan, but we do have a reason to say don't put brood meat and milk on the same table, because you might do the same thing with animal meat and dairy. And then, that's practically, Rashi says, if you put them on the table, then it's practically speaking, you've come to the point of eating, because then it's very likely that you're going to eat them together. Don't tell me that would be a gzera l'gzera. It's basically, we're saying you should make one gzera over here, because without that gzera, you are going to come to eat them together. In fact, Maharam Shif and Teferis Yaakov explain that what Abaya is saying it's not even a matter of gzera l'gzera. This is when you have an isur daraisa, yes, make a gzera l'gzera. So when it comes to the challah that we're talking about before, where again there's no challah of Eretz Yisrael in this area, then fine, don't make a gzera like that. But over here, where you have the real concern of besar behema b'cholav, then yes, we should go to the extreme even of saying that you're not allowed to put them on the same table. So Abaya says, don't tell me we don't make gzera l'gzera. It could very well be that brood meat with milk is also only d'rabbanan, and nevertheless the chachamim have reason to make the gzera because it's so likely that from that you're going to come to putting animal meat and milk on the same table, and from there it's tantamount to eating them. Okay, so the Gemara says maski for Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes furthermore has a question. Now who is the question on? So Rashi explains the question is going to be on Reb Yosi. Even if you're going to tell me that Bsar Oif B'Cholav is Daraisa, you can still argue that it's a Gzera L'Gzera. Because what is it? You're not allowed to put them on the table because you're going to come to eat them. Now suppose you did eat meat and milk together, but if they're both cold, then it also wouldn't be an issur midaraisa, because midaraisa, it's only also when they're cooked together. Midaraisa, you'd be allowed to eat a piece of meat and a piece of cheese one right after the other, or even together in the same sandwich or whatever. Midaraisa, you're not allowed to cook them together. So therefore, sort of, Sheshes is questioning, what are you telling me that you're saying you have a proof from our Mishnah that the issur of brood meat with milk is daraisa, even if it was dirabanan? And therefore you're saying the fact that we make a gzera, but if it had been dirabanan, we wouldn't make a gzera like gzera. Why? Rav Sheshes is going to ask either way it's dirabanan. So the question is on Rav Yosi. Because So one point is, though, so Tosfos points out that, look, Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef are contemporaries, so therefore it's more logical if Rav Sheshes is going to ask the question, it's going to be on Rav Yosef, his chaver, rather than on Baya, who's Rav Yosef's chaver. The Maharam gives a different point as well. He says that the question can't be on a bias, because what's Rav Sheshes going to say, that you shouldn't make a zera on putting them on the table at all? Then he would ask on the Mishnah, why is the Mishnah even giving us an issur to put them on the table? So his question is on Rav Yosef. If you want to prove the fact that there's an issur to put them on the table, that it means it's also to eat them together, daraisa, not necessarily. So Rav Sheshes says, soif, after all, said and done, son and the son and who. Even if they did touch one another, and even if you did eat them together, it would be cold with cold, and it would be also only dinabanan. So the Mishnah is telling us don't put them on the same table, so clearly we do make a gzera with gzera. And the answer is, Amar Abaya, gzera shemiyala be'opos reseach. Fine. But there you can say the reason why you shouldn't put them on the table, even cold, is because you might put them together on the table in a hot pot. You might put them on the table and put them together into a hot pot, and then they're being cooked together, and then you have an issur daraisa of that you're cooking them together. So it's not just that you're going to eat them; it's the issue that you're going to cook them. All the various talk about, but primarily the Gemara may be talking about eating them.
What is Abaya's response?
Abaya's response is that you shouldn't put them on the table because you might put them together on the table in a hot pot, where then you're going to cook them. So in other words, you're going to take a pot off the fire and put it on the table, and then you're going to put the meat and the cheese together with it, and then they're going to be cooked. And that would be also an atara. So again, whether we say whether the issue is primarily on the cooking or whether the issue is primarily on the eating, either way, you're going to have a problem. So the Gemara says, okay, so if
by definition, by definition, is cooking heating something that's cold, or putting food in something that carry that's hot?
So that's basically what we're going to ask. So they want to ask, so if, please shame you. After all said and done, even if you put them in a hot pot, it's a cliche because you're not going to take the direct pot itself that was on the fire and put them on the table and put it on the table.
Exactly.
You're going to pour it into a serving dish, and you would put that on the table. So it's a cliche.
Right.
For cliche, right. And we have a rule that a cliche does not cook, which comes up in Hilchos Shabbos and then comes up in different other cases. Now, you do have an interesting point, by the way, when it comes to a cliche. There is a concept in halacha called we do say klisheni eni mevashel, but we do also have a concept called dover gush. Sometimes we have a solid thing that gets put in a klisheni. Then sometimes we say it will cook in a klisheni as well because it's a dover when you have a hot dover gush, a hot thing that was placed into a klisheni. It itself retains the heat because it's a bulky thing, and therefore you can have yisurim in it as well. So how that maps onto our Gemara over here. We were saying that if it was in a klisheni, it wouldn't be a problem. So there's discussion about that. There's also a point over here that you're saying even if the klisheni is very hot, it seems that there's not a problem because we're just saying as a blanket statement, klisheni ani mevashel. And one point is, on the other hand, as far as the dover gush thing, at least the issur of basar b'chalav is only, what does it mean, bishul, means cooking, means when there's liquid over there. So then you could say if you have a piece of meat with liquid or poured into a serving dish, then already because of the liquid it starts cooling down, as opposed to when you have something completely dry, then in fact it might still be affected by a tisheni. But here we're not talking about dry things, here we're talking about where they're being cooked together with some kind of liquid. So the question is again that if it's a klisheni, then a klisheni any mevashel, and therefore what's the problem? You're not gonna have an issur of bishul minatorah either. So Ella, no, what he means is, Zera Shemiyalaba says, Ilpas Rishon, he may take the actual direct pot off the fire and put it on the table and put the meat and the cheese into it, and that would definitely be bishul. So therefore, Sabaya says you could well say, so don't tell me that the Mishnah was saying only that you can't put them together only when they're cold, there is the real concern that you might even put them into a hot pot on the table, and even a cleavation, and therefore you would have a problem of cooking, and a problem of cooking, and a problem of eating, and therefore that's reason enough for the Chachamim to say not to put them on the table b'chlal. But that doesn't necessarily demonstrate that bird meat is in fact also with milk d'oraisa. It may well be also only d'rabbanan. Again, you have a machlokas rishonim between Tosfos and the Rambam, whether in fact it is also d'oraisa or not, and eventually that traces back to the machlokas tanoim that we talked about on Amud Aleph, and which we're going to learn more about later in the Perek Beis Hashem. Okay, so now let's start talking about these dinim of putting things on the table together. The Mishnah says, you can put bird meat on with cheese on the same table, but the ein nechel, but you're not allowed to eat them together. That's what Bishamai says, that Bishamai disagrees with what we said in the previous Mishnah, that you can't put them on the table. But Bishamai says, go ahead and put them on the table. It's anyway not also Daraisa, only Dirabanan. Or Basilo says, no, you can't put it on the same table, and you can't eat them together either. And the Mishnah points out, this is one of those cases where Bis Shammai is Makel and Bis Hillel is Machmir, which is against how things usually are. Now, the question is, what is Rabbi Yossi adding by that point? We ourselves can see Bis Shammai is Makel, Bis Hillel is Machmir, so what he's adding by that, we're going to see in the Gemara. Next, the Mishnah continues. Be'ezah shulchan amru. Which table are we talking about, though? Be'shulchan sha'ochel olav. Only the actual table where you're going to be eating. So you're eating, you have all the different things on the table. You're handling all the different things and taking the different foods, and therefore you may end up mixing them together. But on a buffet where you're just setting up the foods and you're not actually eating over there, then you can put them one next to the other, and there's no problem as long as they don't touch one another. So you would have to, as a practical matter, if it's things that are obvious, this one is milchik, this one is fleishik, then you may not have to make any kind of separation. If it's any kind of thing where people may not be sure, then yeah, by all means, put some kind of separation between them, but at least they can be on the same table. So the Gemara asks Rabbi Yossi, Haina Tanakama. Isn't Rabbi Yossi saying exactly the same thing as the Tanakama? The Tanakama had said that according to Bis Shammai, you can put them on the table, and according to Bis Hillel, you can't. And all Rabbi Yossi is doing is telling us that this is a kula of Bis Shammai and a chumra of Bis Hillel. The chi tema achila gufa ikabinayu. Now, in other words, Tosfos explains, the question is not why the Mishnah brings the Machlokas Bis Shammai Bis Hillel when Bis Hillel is saying exactly what we said in the previous Mishnah. Because all it is the Mishnah is telling us, the previous Mishnah told us a Stam Mishnah, that you can't put them on the same table. Now, our Mishnah is telling us, you should know, that was not always universally agreed to. Bis Shammai disagreed with that. But the question is, what is Rabbi Yossi adding in our Mishnah? You're going to argue that the difference between them may be as far as the eating itself, whether it's also daraisa, or whether they have machlokas about the eating itself, about eating the shama and the silo, about eating chicken with milk together. The comment Tanakama about how law can be. The Tanakama is saying they're arguing whether you can put them on the same table, but there's no argument as far as eating. They both agree that you can't eat chicken with milk. But Omale Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi says, Achila Gufa Mikula Bishamai Machum Bishil. You should know, even as far as eating, Bishamai is Makel and Bishil is Machmer. So maybe that's what Rabbi Yossi wants to tell us, that this is Mikula Bishamai Machum Bishil, namely, not only that you can put them on the same table, but that according to Bishamai, you can even eat them together. The problem with that is, Vatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, or again, this is Vatanan, it should be, we learn in a Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi and Mishisha draw Mikula Bis Shammai or Mikhuma Bis Hillel in Masechta Adias, where in Masechta Adias you have, among other things, all these exceptional things, all these exceptional machlokasin of Bis Shammai Bis Hillel, the ones where Bis Shammai is Makel and Bis Hillel is Machmir, unlike usual. As the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya, Bis Shammai primarily the neshamas derived from Gvura, therefore they're more apt to say that something is osir and cannot be used in service of Hashem, whereas Bis Hillel comes from mostly from Midas HaChesed, and therefore their tendency is to say, yes, we can untie this and use it, and it can go up to Hashem by being used for a mitzvah, but because in Kedusha, Chesed and Gvura, incorporate each other. Neither one is selfish and alone, like it is in Klippa. Therefore, Bishama is sometimes Mekor, and Bishila is sometimes Machmer. So fine, in Masechta Edius, it lists all those examples where Bishama is Mekor and Bishila is Machmer, and various other unusual machlokas in between them, where Bishila ended up conceding to Bishama and some other ones. Anyway, so then you have in the Mishnah over there, you have various Tanoim who have their own lists of when Bishama is Mekor and Bishila is Machmer. And so the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yosi and Mishishidvarim, there are six cases where Bishama is Mekel and Bishila is Machmer, and this is one of them, where Bishama says that, according to Rabbi Yosi, that you can put bird meat on the table together with cheese, but you can't eat them. But Bishila says you can't put them on the table and you can't eat them. So it's clear that even Rabbi Yosi agrees that Bishama doesn't say you can eat brewed meat with milk. He just says you could put them on the same table. So we're back to the question, what is Rabbi Yosi adding in our Mishnah? So Ella, no, the answer is, what it is the Mishnah is telling us that the Mishnah is telling us Mantanakama Rabbi Yosi. You should know who is the Tanakama of our Mishnah is in fact Rabbi Yosi, meaning in other words, the Tana forgot at first to mention his name. So now, though he remembered and therefore he put in Rabbi Yosi's name. The reason why he did that, as we have in this coming Shabbos, is Pirkei Avos. Anybody who says something in the name of the one who said it over brings Geula to the world. As it says, Esther told the king about Bigson and Teresh's plot in the name of Mordechai, and that eventually brought Geula to the Jewish people, because then it was written in the Sefer HaZichronos, and they have the whole story that developed from that in the Megillah. So we see, you're supposed to say Dover B'Shem Omer, So therefore the Tanakama, having forgotten originally when he formulated our Mishnah to say that it's according to Rabbi Yosi, then he stuck in Rabbi Yosi's statement in order to make it clear that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yosi, and that way he's bringing Geula L'Olam. So let's talk about this topic of brewed meat and milchiks. So the Gemara says Tana Agra Hamor Rab Abba. Agra, that was his name, the father-in-law of Rab Abba. We find him in a few places in Shas. We had him in Menachas. He comes up here and there in Shas. He was apparently his son-in-law Rab Abba was much more famous. So therefore he's called his son-in-law. Therefore he's called the father-in-law of Rab Abba. But he himself was a Talmud Chacham in his own right. So he taught a Braisa. You're allowed to eat chicken, and you're allowed to eat chicken or brewed meat in general, and cheese ba'pikoron in a careless way, ba'pikoron maloshen hefter. What does that mean? So it sounds like it means that you could eat them together, but we know that not. He said that even the Shammai agrees you can't eat them together. So who tani lo v'hu amalah? So Agra taught the Braisa with this loshen in the name of his rebbeim v'hu amalah, and then he explained. And then he explained with his own svara, what does that pikoron mean over here? Just means it means that you can eat one after the other, below natilas yadayim, over like kinuach hapeh. You can eat them one after the other without having to wash your hands in between and without having to clean out your mouth in between. So now, what does that mean? Does it mean that after you've eaten chicken, you're immediately allowed to eat milchik? It sounds like he's saying with chicken, yes, and with animal meat, no, as the Gemara is going to explain further on, we're going to talk about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that with animal meat, it tends to get stuck between your teeth, and tends to leave a fatty residue in the mouth, and therefore you have to wait a certain amount of time before you eat milk, like the usual 6 hour that we're familiar with, although we'll talk about more details of that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. In any case, so he's saying that it would be that, that if you want to eat one and you want to eat cheese and then you want to eat chicken or the other way around, then you would be able to do it without washing your hands in between and without cleaning out your mouth in between. Now, Tosfos explains that actually, first Tosfos explains that it means in either direction. You could eat chicken first or cheese first, and then you wouldn't have to wait. On the other hand, the Rambam explains that no, what Agra is saying is if you ate cheese, then you can eat chicken right afterwards. You don't have to wait and you don't have to wait in between. The fact that we wait an hour is based on the Zohar. Me'ikra din, when it comes to if you want to eat meat, then yes. After cheese, then yes, you would have to want, except for certain kinds of cheeses, except for certain kinds of hard cheeses, which will then you'd have to wait. But otherwise, me'ikra din, you wouldn't have to wait. You would, if you want to eat animal meat after it, you just have to wash your hands and clean out your mouth by eating something. But now we're saying, now Agra is saying that if you're going to eat chicken afterwards, you don't even need to do that. In fact, Tosfos goes on to say that if Rabbi Natan brings, and the Halachas Gedolos says that even when we're learning tomorrow about that, if you eat meat, you can't eat cheese right afterward, milk right afterwards, it would mean only if you don't wash your hands and your mouth out. If you do, then you would actually be allowed to. The halacha, the accepted halacha, is not like that, though, of course. And as we know, if you've eaten milk, you do have to wait afterwards for fleshes. So in any case, you have different opinions then among the Rishonim over here. How to understand over here? Are we saying that you're allowed to eat chicken and immediately you're allowed to eat cheese afterwards without doing any of these things, or is it only the other way around? If you're going to eat cheese and then you want to eat chicken, then you don't need to wash out your mouth and you don't need to rinse your hands. And again, the fact that we do is based on the Zohar that we should wait an hour. So the Gemara says in this connection, Rabbi Yitzchak Breder de Mesharshia Ifla Lebei Rav Ashi. Rabbi Yitzchak Breder de Mesharshia one time visited Rav Ashi's house. Aisul Gvina, the Ochal. They brought him cheese and he ate it. Aisul Bistra Ochal. Then they brought him meat and he also ate it. Vele Moshe Yodeh, and he didn't wash his hands in between. So he cleaned out his mouth, but he didn't wash his hands. So they said, didn't Agra, the father-in-law of Rav Abba, teach a braisa that say that chicken or meat or bird and then cheese can be eaten by pikoran carelessly, one after the other, without washing your hands in between? So it sounds like only when it comes to birds and cheese, but not meat and cheese. Amalahu. So the answer is then, Rabbi Yitzchak, that would only be at night, because at night, if it's dark, you're not going to be able to see if your hands are clean, so there might be a little bit of the fattiness of the cheese on your hands, and then that's going to go on to the meat that you eat next, and therefore, granted, it won't be also daraisa, of course, because they weren't cooked together, but still, you don't want that cross-contamination. Abba b'yamama, but he says, by day, ha-chazina, I can see my hands are clean, and therefore, I don't need to wash my hands in between them. So again, in principle, based on this Gemara, it would come out that if you've eaten cheese, you are indeed allowed to eat. You're allowed to eat fleishiks immediately afterwards, especially, by night, even when it's dark, even bird meat, because then there's less of an issur on it daraisa. Because as you said, if we take the view that bird meat with milk is also only derabanan, or with animal meat by day. So in principle, you have all that. In practice, of course, the dinim as we follow them nowadays are more machmer than that. If you eat any kind of meat, then you have to wait, as we'll learn tomorrow, as the Shem, 6 hours. And then on the other hand, if you eat cheese, you are allowed to eat meat afterwards, as long as, again, you make sure your hands are clean. And if it's at night, then the Shulchan Aruch says, then you'd have to rinse them out, and you also, either way, you have to clean out your mouth by, for example, chewing some bread or any of most other kinds of foods that will help effectively wipe out and clean out your mouth, and then rinse it out with something, then rinse it out with water or wine or something like that. Besar oif, you don't need that, says the Mechaber. And then the Ramah says yesh machmir and some are machmir. Even if you're going to eat meat after cheese, that you do need to wash your hands and wash out your mouth in between. In addition, you also have the din of hard cheese where you have to wait 6 hours after it. And then on top of all of that, you have what it says according to the Zohar that you have to wait an hour between milchiks and fleishiks, which is what we do as well. So we'll learn more about these dinim. We'll continue talking about more of these dinim, about what you have to do between one and the other tomorrow. And tomorrow, Baz Hashem, in particular, we'll learn the source for the din about waiting 6 hours between milchiks and fleishiks.
That's